The Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for November 18th, 2010. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, there's still no decision on who will be the next chair of the Senate Agriculture Committee. We'll have that and other stories this half hour. And Todd Gleason will look at cash corn sales, and we'll have the latest on agricultural weather. It's all on the Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Thursday afternoon, here are how futures settled in Kansas City. December wheat, 710 and a quarter, up 14 and three quarters. March, 726, up 15 and a quarter. May, 733 and three quarters, up 14 and three quarters. December wheat of the Chicago Board of Trade, 645 and a quarter, up 12 and three quarters. March, 684 and a half, up 13. May, 709 and a quarter, up 13 and a half. December corn, 541 and three quarters, up 16. March, 555 and three quarters, up 16 and a half. May, 562 and a half, up 16 and a quarter. July, 565 and three quarters, up 15 and three quarters. January beans, 1242, up 37. March, 1249 and a quarter, up 37 and a quarter. May, 1248 and a half, up 37 and a quarter. July, 1250, up 38 and a quarter. December soybean meal, 335, up $7. December soybean oil, 5092, up 198. December oats, 354, up 6 and 3 quarters. December live cattle, 180, up 145. November feeders, 112.45, up 25. December lean hogs, 68.65, up 2.5 on the day. And those are Thursday afternoon's settlements in Chicago and in Kansas City.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says cool weather will dominate the northwestern Corn Belt over the coming week, while a warming trend gets underway in the southeast. Highs over the next few days will be in the 20s and 30s northwest, while southeastern crop areas will warm from the 40s and 50s today to the 50s and 60s during the weekend. Extreme highs over 70 may occur from Missouri to southern Illinois briefly late this coming weekend. Bitter cold air will move to the northern plains over the next few days, but it will not move into the Midwest until next week. A weak weather system is expected in the western Corn Belt Saturday and Sunday, and eastern areas Sunday and Monday. Moisture totals will be light, with less than 1/4 of an inch resulting in many areas and light snowfall in the far northwest.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Jackie.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Before we get to particulars, I'd like to get your reaction on just how you felt about the overall tone of today's trade.
Well, I would have to characterize it, I believe, as undecided. I think that, you know, it was nice to see the market come rebounding back the way that it did. But, you know, we didn't have a tremendous amount of follow-through. It very much followed some of the old patterns. Crude was higher, gold was higher, and the dollar was down. And so we got everything we got last night, and we just kind of sat there. So to me, it looks like it is a consolidating market. It's a market that's trying to build a floor. Or if we traded a lot lower, it would be a ceiling. But a market that is just trying to find its way. And I think some of the greatest confusion and concern comes in because of next week's holiday.
Well, do you like it better as the floor or the ceiling right now? Which does it look like to you?
It looks like the floor to me, to be absolutely honest with you. I think that, you know, so many times people get extremely excited and concerned when you've had a strong bull move like we have and then a pullback. But any good bull market requires pullbacks and consolidation so that you can build higher floors and give support to a market that can move higher again. So
Let's look at some particulars then. We'll begin over in the soybeans on the January contract. Had that spike low earlier this week. What I liked about it, if you were a bull, is you didn't fill the measuring gap from the October report.
Right. You know, and so I think that the other thing that's good about the bean market is, you know, that basically the bean market traded through the 40-day moving average, which is at $12.25, and came back out both times, this morning and yesterday. You know, yesterday we traded down through it, we closed above it. Today we traded down through it, opened above it, and closed above it. We still didn't make it up to the 20-day, but a nice technical move today.
The other thing I think about when I see this chart is I wonder if that measuring gap now, not tomorrow, it won't happen tomorrow, but longer term, maybe out into next year, you might begin to make a case from the 2010 lows to the gap and the gap on up with an objective, if it was January, around $14.
That's exactly right. And, you know, the one thing that is always frustrating is when you don't fill a gap, you know it's always hanging over the top of the market. I was thrilled to be able to see us fill the corn gaps and have that behind us now so that we can look for something to give us some kind of support and to give us move higher. And so I think that gap, I would have been much happier if we'd have seen it fill, but it just didn't. And so I'm much more in favor of the $14. And I think that we may come back and fill this gap during the holiday time now. May happen on an overnight.
And meanwhile, corn pretty much settled on the December at 541.75, settled on what was the midpoint of the measuring gap that we had been using earlier as a pivot point. And I'm beginning to think that maybe if we can get a little bit more disappearance in the corn, we might be able to talk about upside objectives in the 630 area.
I would think that what you're saying is very, very true and very realistic. Now, when we start to talk about objectives in the 630 area, I don't want producers, you know, to get all up and down and jump up and down excited that they just hang on to cash figuring it's going to go there, because one of the fears that certainly has to be addressed is whether or not there will be cash contracts available for them if we get to those levels. And so technically, absolutely correct. From a cash side, it's pretty risky to be waiting for something like that.
Well, that's an interesting debate and one I've had with some other analysts who tell me, well, the market is in a much better place than it was 2 years ago when we went through this. Elevators have done a better job. They're more cash heavy. 630 shouldn't be an issue with them. What do you think about that?
Well, that it certainly doesn't ring true for the elevator people that I've been talking with. I've heard things like our bank says they'll cover us to $6 and not above. Okay, and so, you know, if they don't cover them beyond $6, it's going to be very difficult. And even even at that, you have to wonder how much risk they're willing to take. You don't know how high this market can go. When we have a precedent like 2008 sitting in the background, they're going to have to really be on their toes. I believe some of the elevators have gone out, secured additional financing, but financing for how far and for how long? And you know that these markets, when you have limits that, well, corn, 30 up, then 45, if you keep on getting into a situation like that, all of that money you secured can be gone in a really fast, fast hurry. And so I am not going to disagree with the fact that they're probably in a better position, that they're more well-prepared. Does that mean a producer should not have himself protected? Absolutely not.
The one thing in this corn market that has been a little bit of a head-scratcher is the fact that exports have not been all that great over the last 4 or 5 weeks. Today they came in at 21 million bushels. I'm really going to be interested in seeing what exports come in at next Friday after we had the dip.
Well, I'll be interested in seeing that too. Now, there's a couple of different viewpoints on that too, Dave, from the standpoint that in some of the people that we know who work in the exporting industry haven't been all excited about all the corn or shipping all of this corn. They're not saying that we're really losing export sales. What they're saying is there's so much at capacity in so many of the ports that basically taking more books or more sales onto the books for near term for spot isn't something that's realistic for them. So I'll be interested to see if we don't see a tremendous jump in the export sales in this marketing year after this dip. I don't know what I'm going to attribute it to be honest. Is it because they can't handle it in the near term, or is it just because maybe they have enough taken care of for this period of time and they're going to let the market show them whether they need to get more?
Meanwhile, our cash grain analysis analysts continue to tell me that it's pretty competitive trying to get trains.
There's no question about that, and I don't see that as being anything that's going to change soon. We haven't put much back into the rail infrastructure, and a while back, I'll just give you an example of why maybe trains are in such high demand. I figured out what it was going to take to ship corn from Minnesota, Savage, Minnesota, down to New Orleans. If you did it by train, depending upon how heavy the corn was, it was somewhere between $0.92 and $1.02 a bushel. If you did it by the river, you were looking at $1.24¾. If you did it by truck, it was $3.74. So it certainly says, where should we be putting more money? Into trains. And that's why they're in such high demand.
Meanwhile, all of this that we've been talking about so far, it seems to me, is predicated on what the dollar is doing. I think that's probably a real key hinge point at this point. Dollar got a little bit softer today and touched an area at that 78.60, which has been was a ceiling and now maybe good support. We'll have to see.
Well, that's absolutely the truth. And one of the things I think that we have to keep in mind is we could be looking at what we would call a currency war. In other words, countries outside of the U.S. coming in and buying the U.S. dollar to try and protect their export business. And so it could be a situation where it really doesn't even reflect necessarily our inflation or not inflation, that it really reflects what's going on in another country. So it's more complex, but I do believe that you're very right. The direction of the dollar certainly helps us determine what the direction of the commodity market is going to be.
We have about 20 seconds left. Anything before we let you go?
Well, I'm not going to get to say Happy Thanksgiving to a lot of people or to you, so I'm going to say Happy Thanksgiving because I'm going to be gone on vacation.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, Jackie.
Yeah, thank you, Dave. Have a great one.
You too.
Yeah.
That's
bye-bye.
Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group in Champaign, Illinois.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Rob O'Malley in Champaign at 217-378-7633. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
In agricultural news, the Senate moved closer to improving the nation's food safety and inspection system with a vote yesterday, but senators continue to negotiate over whether small farms and food processors that sell directly to consumers should be exempt under the bill. The Senate voted 74 to 25 to bring to the floor the FDA Food Safety Modernization Act. Negotiators continue over the final language of the bill, including an amendment by Senator John Tester, a Democrat from Montana, that would exclude small farmers and processors from some of the inspection costs and paperwork provisions. Tester says, quote, "The problem with our food supply is not with the little guy, it's with the industrialized model that distributes to 20, 30 states." The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention states that foodborne illnesses cause 325,000 hospitalizations, 5,000 deaths, and cost the country nearly $152 billion in medical expenses each year. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development says economic growth in the world's most developed economies will gradually pick up steam over the coming 2 years, but that the recovery will be uneven and unemployment will remain persistently high. The Paris-based OECD says that the economies of its 32 member countries would likely grow a combined 2.8% in 2010 after shrinking 3.4% in 2009. It predicts growth in the OECD in 2011 of 2.3% and that growth in developing countries, notably China, will shore up the recovery. However, it says risks to the global recovery remain, including high government debt in some countries. A hot topic in agriculture circles this week is who will replace defeated Senate Agriculture Chair Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas. Two candidates have emerged, Debbie Stabenow of Michigan and Kent Conrad of North Dakota. Conrad, the current chair of the Senate Budget Committee, says he is actively discussing, quote, "Where do people think it would be most valuable for me to be?" Stabenow, who has less seniority than Conrad, has been lobbying hard for the job. Mary Kay Thatcher is Legislative Policy Director at the American Farm Bureau Federation. Thatcher says both would do a great job.
You know, they come from different backgrounds. Obviously, Michigan is more of a dairy, fruit, and vegetable state, and North Dakota is more of a program crop state. But the fact is, when you become chairman of a committee, you no longer represent just your state. You got to find a way to represent the whole country. And I think you see that through the history. You see Tom Harkin coming in. He certainly had his bent on Iowa, but he became chairman and he recognized right away, now I represent, you know, 17 states on this committee. Probably if it's Debbie Stabenow, it takes a little bit longer to get up and going just because she would not have as many staff. Kent Conrad could probably steal a few of his budget committee staff, bring them over. He's got a lot of people on his personal staff that know agriculture. But I think in the long run, they're both going to know that as chairman, you represent everybody.
Both Conrad and Stabenow are up for re-election in 2012. Key Democratic anti-hunger leaders say that the House should pass a bill that would provide more money for the school lunch program so schools could buy more nutritious food. But some anti-hunger advocates say that Congress should not use a small cut in future food stamp benefits to pay for improvements to child nutrition programs. Monday, Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack and Education Secretary Arne Duncan held a joint news conference at a Northeast Washington elementary school to urge Congress to pass the child nutrition bill. Vilsack said the children deserve better school meals because they must have the conditions to be educated to compete with children all over the world. Three key House Democratic hunger leaders have written their colleagues asking them to support the bill. House Education and Labor Committee Chairman George Miller, House Agriculture Appropriations Subcommittee Chairman Rosa DeLauro, and Representative Jim McGovern urged their colleagues in a letter to support the bill because it addresses the critical challenge of childhood obesity and hunger with historic improvements. USDA this week published a rule in the Federal Register that adds the Brazilian state of Santa Catarina to the list of regions recognized as free of foot and mouth and other animal diseases. The change is based on findings by USDA animal health officials and also delivers on U.S. promises to Brazil made as part of an agreement regarding U.S. cotton subsidies. Under the agreement, the U.S. is providing $147 million annually to support the Brazilian cotton industry and opening its market to meat from Santa Catarina. In return, Brazil has agreed not to begin imposing tariffs of hundreds of millions of dollars worth of imports of U.S. goods and services, sanctions that were approved earlier by the World Trade Organization. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Corn futures have seen a hard break lower in recent trading sessions, but rallied today. What's a good level to do some cash selling? Todd Gleason explored that issue with University of Illinois agricultural economist Daryl Good.
Cash corn, depending on the market, moved above $5.80 a bushel the week of the November USDA crop report. It's a level at which University of Illinois ag economist Daryl Good says farmers should feel very comfortable making cash sales.
I think that's, a real opportunity to be marketing old crop corn and probably starting new crop as well. I know those prices are not quite as high, but we're looking at cash bids probably well over $5 out of the field next fall. It's hard to imagine that that's not an attractive sale to a lot of folks.
Old crop corn, for sure, but new crop, too, says Daryl Good. He'd be a willing seller of 10 to 15% of the expected 2011 corn production, as long as the price of the inputs had been locked down.
Well, I think on corn, we're a little more vulnerable on the cost side. So I think if you haven't done that and you have an opportunity to say, you know, I can lock in this price level that appears to be profitable at these costs, expectations, then locking in part of that cost would be a good idea.
A good idea, because while demand for corn from most sectors has been strong, usage by the ethanol industry, for instance, was running 18% ahead of pace as compared to last year, there are some weak points. The export market has been lackluster at best so far in the early going of the fiscal year, so much so that USDA dropped demand in the market by 50 million bushels. And then, looking ahead, there is the January 1 expiration of the ethanol blender's tax. It'll take 46 cents a gallon out of the equation that has, to this point, caused the gasoline industry to blend more ethanol into the nation's fuel supply than is required by law. It'll take congressional action to extend that expiring blender's tax credit. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
It's St. Peter the Apostle Day, patron of bakers, butchers, fishermen, harvesters, and foot problems. On this day in agricultural history in 1307, the legendary William Tell shot an apple from his son's head in order to avoid execution for failing to bow before a hat on a pole on the local square belonging to the Habsburg Emperor. Historians continue to argue over the saga generally. The story is considered fiction. In 1805, Lewis and Clark reached the Pacific Ocean, the first Americans to cross a continent. Over a two-year period, the expedition covered 8,000 miles. Upon their return to St. Louis, they received a hero's welcome and grants of land. The Sacagawea received no compensation for her services. In 1810, Asa Gray was born, a leading American botanist of his time. He was a strong supporter of Darwin. In 1874, the Women's Christian Temperance Union was formed in Cleveland, Ohio. In 1966, American Roman Catholics were no longer required to abstain from eating meat on Fridays, but the prohibition continued on Ash Wednesday and Fridays during Lent. And in 1970, Linus Pauling declared that large doses of vitamin C could keep the common cold at bay. Pauling concluded that the best daily intake of vitamin C for most people was between 2.3 grams and 10 grams a day, well above the recommended daily allowance. And that's This Day in Agricultural History. Good afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for our look at the agricultural weather is meteorologist Peter Levitt. Good afternoon, Peter.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Third week of the month means that NOAA comes out with their long-range forecasts. 3 months up, what are they saying?
Well, we'll start off with the December outlook, which is on their 30-day, and then we'll hit the 3 months on the 30-day forecasts. They've got the temperatures warm across the southern two-thirds of the country for the month of December, and then wet only in the Pacific Northwest, dry across the entire southern tier of states, the border states dry. That puts the Midwest in an area which they call equal chances, which means that they're not really making a forecast of wet or cool or warm or dry for those areas. For the 90-day forecast, though, and this is the winter forecast, December, January, and February, considered meteorological winter. They've got warm temperatures again covering most of the southern two-thirds of the country from Utah and Arizona eastward to the Atlantic coast. A narrow strip of equal chance weather, which is Iowa, Wisconsin, Michigan, and then cold temperatures, below normal temperatures, are confined only to North Dakota, northern Minnesota, and northeast Montana, and also a little splotch of colder conditions in the California area. For precipitation, they've got it wet in the Pacific Northwest again, and they have it wet in the Midwest. Well, since they have it sort of ambivalent in December, it means January and February, they're looking for a wet pattern in the Midwest. And dry weather continues across the southern tier of states again, this time from California all the way to Florida and up the East Coast into the Carolinas. This pattern is what we call a classical La Nina pattern, which is what we're in right now, which tends to keep it mild and dry in the Southland, cool and wet in the Northwest and the northern tier of states, and just about normal elsewhere. So that's their official forecast. Now, I can put a little spin on that from what we work on when we make our long-range forecast. I agree pretty much with the mild weather across the south, but I suspect that they've got the warm too far east. I'd make the warmer weather in the southwestern part of the southern half of the country and more normal toward the southeast. And I've had colder weather coming a little bit farther south than they do. They only extended into the Dakotas and Minnesota. I'd have below normal temperatures digging a little further south and east through much of the northern half of the Midwest and into the South Atlantic states as well. The reason for that is we have a characteristic in the Pacific called the Pacific Decadal Oscillation, which has become negative over the last 2 years, and this is resulting in a shift in the climate from the generally milder pattern of the early half of this decade to a pattern that should feature colder temperatures over most of the northern and north-central portions of the country. So we'll see how that works out. It looks like a pattern, according to the National Weather Service, that's reasonably pleasant in the south and normal in the north. I'd be a little bit colder in the north and the east.
Thanks, Peter.
Okay. My pleasure.
That's agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt, and that is today's Closing Market Report. You can listen to the show again on the web. Go to willag.org and click on the Closing Market Report link under the audio tab. This is Dave Dickey.